So what I want to talk with you about this morning is finding Jesus when you feel lost. Now, we know we're never actually lost because we belong to Him. But there are times when we feel lost, don't we? So I remember, now, those of us that are older, before cell phones, I mean, there was actually a time when there weren't any cell phones, and before GPS, you know, when you went somewhere, if you were lost, you were lost. You couldn't talk to Google, you couldn't talk to Siri, you know, and you couldn't call and ask anybody for help. You were just lost. So you probably pulled into a service station, and you're all like, what's that? Well, it's now called a gas station, and you go there now for sandwiches and food. You don't go there for gas, but you used to go to service stations, and there were three or four people, and you'd say, hey, do you know? And they'd tell you how to get there. So I was starting to get used to GPS. I think I had a Garmin, and I was trying, you know, and some of you are like, what's a Garmin? I'm sorry. And I was trying to find my way to Delaware to a class that I was participating in, and I knew that there was a shortcut, and I knew about how to get there. But, you know, that's back when you had printed maps, too. And my kids always kid me, because, you know, if I get somewhere, I just, okay, if I can't find it, we're getting the map out. So anyway, it says, the Garmin was saying, okay, turn in a mile. So I'm looking, and I'm looking. Okay, turn right in 100 feet, and I'm looking, looking. There's no road there. Okay, maybe I passed it. So, you know, it says, make a U-turn when you safely can. So I go a little further, I do the U-turn, and I come back, and so I get to the same spot, and it says, because now I'm going the other direction, turn left. There's no road there. There wasn't any road the first time. There isn't any road the second time. So I pull over, get my map out, figure out how to get to where I'm going. I never found this supposed shortcut. I know where it is now, but back then, okay, we just didn't always know how we were going. And then one night, we got a call at our house, and I won't say from who, but this person says, hey, I'm lost. I'm in the mountains, and I'm lost, and I had to go down the mountain to get cell service, because this person uses GPS for everything. See, sometimes it's nice to have some backups. And they said, could you please get on your computer and text me directions, because I'm going to my friend's house who lives way up in the mountains, and when I get about halfway there, I have no cell service. But, you know, I don't know if you know this, but usually you can get a text, unless you're in Outer Mongolia. But I went to Paraguay and had more service than I do in Nuga. So, yeah, where we live, we have to make Wi-Fi calls. We don't even have enough service to make calls at our house. But Paraguay, no matter where we went, we had service, and we could see the towers on the mountains around us. So anyway, so I got on my computer. I found out where this person was trying to get, and they had gotten off the phone, and I'm like, I don't know where they are on this road, though. So I said, let me know when you get to the next intersection. And they texted back, I just passed one. Turn around. Go back. So they told me where they were, and I said, okay, go about a mile and turn right on Mountain View Road. And I'm sitting there, and I'm waiting and waiting because we can't call, and I'm not getting a text, and I'm not getting a text. Finally, because it was pitch dark. It was at night, and it said, I turned on Mountain View Road. Now I know where I am. Thanks, Dad. So that person got there, and well, yeah, but I wasn't saying who it was. Yeah, I wasn't saying who it was. So sometimes we do get lost, right? We think we have the tools, but the tools that we have aren't working for the situation. And all of a sudden, we feel lost. Or in this case, this person was in the dark and didn't have a cell phone. So sometimes we just get ourselves in situations where even though we belong to Jesus and we know we're not lost, but we feel lost. The word tells us, ask and keep asking, and it will be given to you. Seek and keep seeking, and you will find. Knock and keep knocking, and it will be opened to you. Luke 11. Sometimes I ask once, and then I can't figure out why I didn't get it. Or I seek a little bit, but I don't find because I don't keep seeking. Or I knock, I'm saying, Lord, is this door going to open? But I don't keep knocking. So we have to sometimes decide to diligently seek the Lord. Not wholeheartedly, but diligently seek the Lord. Jeremiah 29. You will seek me and find me when you search for me. Come on, with a little bit of your heart, all of your heart. And I will allow myself to be found by you. I love that. Okay, he's not purposely hiding. He just wants us to seek him. And he said that he will allow himself to be found. Psalm 27. The Lord is my light and my salvation. So why should I be afraid? The Lord is my fortress, so why should I tremble? Though a mighty army surrounds me, sometimes it feels that way, doesn't it? But my heart will not be afraid. This one thing, so of all the things I can ask of the Lord, this one thing I ask of the Lord, the thing that I seek most. So in case you didn't catch it, point number one is we're seeking. What do you do when you feel lost? You seek the Lord. Is to dwell in the house of the Lord all the days of my life, and to behold the beauty of the Lord and meditate in his temple. And this is still David speaking. When I pray, be merciful and answer me, Lord. My heart has heard you say, so David is talking to God, my heart has heard you say, come, seek my face. And I respond, your face, Lord, I will seek. I am confident that I will see the Lord's goodness while I am in the land of the living. Wait patiently for the Lord. I don't know about all of you, but I don't like to wait patiently. You know, I wait, but it's not always patient. Most of the time, it's not. Be brave and courageous. He shall strengthen your heart. Come on. So we seek him. He's not hiding. We can find him. He will strengthen us. He will make us brave and courageous. And sometimes it's a little bit of a waiting period where we keep asking, keep seeking, keep knocking. David had experiences where it was imperative, it was a matter of life or death, that he learned to diligently seek the Lord. Not just with part of his heart, but all of his heart. And this actually became one of his greatest strengths and greatest joys. I sought the Lord and he heard me, come on, and delivered me from all my fears. That didn't happen the very first time. He kept seeking, kept asking, kept knocking. He delivered me from all my fears. And then he encourages all of us. Oh, taste and see that the Lord is good. So I want to tell you two stories today about David. And probably both of the, well, maybe the second one you haven't heard. The first one I know you know, but that's okay. We're going to look at it a little bit differently because you know you can read the same story and get different things out of it every single time. I've been a Christian since I've been a junior in high school, and I'm still getting things out of the scripture because certain words will jump out and certain phrases will jump out. But they weren't the phrases and words that jumped out the last time I read it. So, you know, you might be saying, oh, Pastor, okay, I know that. Just stick with me. Okay? We want a lot to allow the Holy Spirit to speak to our hearts what we need for today. And it's not the same thing we needed a year ago or 6 months ago. Okay? So to catch you up on this story, you know David, and he was the shepherd, youngest son. He was anointed king. Then the prophet left, and he's like, okay, well, I'll go back to being a shepherd. And where, when it... No, no, no. While he was a shepherd, by himself, no one else to depend on but God, he learned some very valuable lessons. So now his brothers, his three oldest brothers, are at war. So picture this. The whole army of Israel is here, which includes his three brothers. Across the ravine is the whole army of the Philistines. And every day, a 9-foot warrior comes out and says, okay, we don't have to have a war here. You send somebody to beat me, and if you beat me, we'll be your servant. If I kill the person who comes after me, then you all are my servants. So he says that, and everybody on this side, including David's brothers, turn and ran the other way back to camp. They come out the next day. Stomp, stomp, stomp. Here comes the 9-foot guy again. Same message, same reaction. They run back to camp. 40 days this happened. Come on. Not 4 days, 40 days. See, sometimes the enemy comes and yells at us and presents himself day after day. And every day we have to decide, how am I going to respond? Am I going to turn and run or what? Okay. So if you are of those who like to follow along, we are in 1 Samuel 17. 1 Samuel chapter 17. So Dad says to the shepherd boy, hey David, you want to take your brother some food? And by the way, I'm going to send along some food for the commander of the army. Just go and deliver it and see how they are and come back. So David shows up, and just shortly after he gets there and delivers the food, stomp, 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 out comes Goliath. David's back here in the crowd somewhere, and he says, so who's going to respond? Now, I'm paraphrasing, so please don't get upset. This is not word for word. Why is nobody responding? And his brothers were like, oh, well, who sent you to make fun of us? What are you going to do? And he goes, well, he's defying the living God. See, he realized who was actually doing the fighting. The fighting wasn't the guys in the army, because they came representing God. When we show up in a situation, we're representing God. Okay, you ready? Verse 31. So I just told you what David said. 31. When the words that David spoke were heard, they repeated them before Saul, the king. And he sent for him, David. And David said to Saul, let no man's heart fail because of him, Goliath. Your servant will go and fight with this Philistine. It's thought that David was probably around 13, 14, possibly 15. All of these soldiers turned and ran the other way. This teenager says, well, if none of you are going to fight, I'll go fight. And the king says to David, but you're not able to go and fight against this Philistine, for you are but a youth. And he's been a man of war from his youth. But David said to Saul, your servant used to keep sheep for his father. And when there came a lion or a bear and took a lamb, see, now catch this. He didn't just scare the bear and lion away as he saw them coming. They came and grabbed the lamb and ran. I went after him and struck him and delivered it out of his mouth. What did the boy learn? Yeah. See, we fight the small battles, and when God helps us win the small battles, then we're ready for a bigger battle. But if we run away even from the small battles, what's going to happen when we face a big battle? And if he rose up against me, now this is the bear, picture this, I caught him by his beard and struck him and killed him. What? Come on. Your servant has struck down both lions and bears. And this uncircumcised Philistine shall be like one of them. For he has defied the armies of the living God. Is that the God we serve? Same yesterday, today, and forever. And David said, the Lord who delivered me from the paw of the lion and from the paw of the bear, he'll deliver me from the hand of this Philistine. And Saul said to David, go, and the Lord be with you. Then Saul clothed David with his armor. He put on a helmet of bronze on his head, clothed him with a coat of mail, and David strapped his sword over his armor. He tried in vain to walk with all this armor on, but he had not tested it. David said to Saul, I can't go with these. I haven't tested these. See, we can't use anybody else's armor, anybody else's way of doing battle. We have to use what God has equipped us with. So sometimes people say, well, this is what you need to do. This is what worked for me. No, what's worked for you? What has God shown that worked for you? Many times for me in the past, it was worship. When I couldn't get victory any other way, I'd come over here, put worship on, spend a couple hours, I'd end up kneeling, praying, crying, and I left having the victory. Other people, it's prayer. Other people, it's sitting quietly. Other people, it's reading the Word. So don't try to be like anybody else. How has God trained you to get the victory? So he took them off. Then he picked up his staff and chose 5 smooth stones from the brook and put them in his shepherd's pouch. See, this is what he was used to doing when he faced the enemy. His sling was in his hand, and he approached the Philistine. And the Philistine moved forward and came near to David with his shield bearer in front of him. And when the Philistine looked and saw David, he disdained him, for he was a youth and handsome in appearance. In other words, he didn't look like a soldier or a warrior. And the Philistine said to David, am I a dog that you come to me with sticks? And then the Philistine cursed him by his gods. The Philistine said to David, come to me, and I will give your flesh to the birds of the air and to the beasts of the field. Many of us would have turned and ran the other way, just like the soldiers did. We expect when we approach the enemy that he's just going to bow down and say, okay, sure, I'll give up. Sometimes we have to stand our ground. Then David said to the Philistine, you come to me with a sword and a spear and a javelin, but I come to you, and he doesn't even say with my sling and stones, I come to you in the name of the Lord of hosts, the God of the army of Israel, whom you have defied. This day the Lord will deliver you into my hand, and I will strike you down and cut off your head. And I will give the dead bodies of the host of the Philistines this day to the birds of the air and of the wild beasts of the earth, that all the earth may know that there is a God in Israel. Come on, that should stir something up in your spirit. And that all this assembly may know that the Lord saves not with sword and spear. See, we think we have to have the biggest, strongest, wildest weapon. At least a weapon as big as what the enemy has. Not the case. Why? For the battle is the Lord's, and he will give you into my hand. And you know the end of the story. So what he learned by trusting the Lord every day during doing his normal role, his normal job, his normal lifestyle, through that, he learned to trust God and saw God be faithful. And that convinced him that God would deliver him again. All right, just pulling up the next story so I can start here. So Saul knew that Samuel had anointed him king, and he did not know David's heart. He did not realize that David was not going to try to pull the kingdom away from him. So because he felt threatened, he went after David. He chased him here and there and everywhere. So one day, he had heard that David was hiding in this land. And so I think, I didn't look at it again this morning, I think it's 3,000 troops they took to go after David. And he's there, and they can't find him, and they can't find him. And he has to relieve himself. Okay, so he had to go to the bathroom. Not what you could do behind a tree. So he goes into a cave. And David and his men are in the back of the cave. And he's in the just in the entrance of the cave a little bit. And he starts to relieve himself. And the men say, David, look here. You can kill him right while he's there doing that. And God brought him in here so you could do that. This is where we're going to pick up the story. First Samuel 24, verse 4. 1 Samuel 24, verse 4. And the men of David said to him, here is the day of which the Lord said to you, behold, I will give your enemy into your hand, and you shall do to him as seems good to you. David arose and cut off the corner of Saul's robe. And afterwards his heart struck him because he had cut off the corner of Saul's robe. He said to his men, the Lord forbid that I should do this thing to my Lord, the Lord's anointed, to put out my hand against him, seeing he is the Lord's anointed. So David persuaded his men with these words, and he did not permit them to attack Saul. Saul rose up, finished his business, left the cave, and went on his way. David then arose and went out of the cave and stood in the entrance and called out to Saul, my Lord and King! And when Saul looked behind him, David bowed with his face to the earth and paid homage. And David said to Saul, why do you listen to the words of men who say, David seeks your harm? Behold, this day your eyes have seen how the Lord gave you into my hand in the cave. And some told me to kill you, but I spared you. I said, I will not put out my hand against my Lord. For he is the Lord's anointed. See, my father, see the corner of your robe in my hand? For by the fact that I cut off the corner of your robe and did not kill you, you may know and see the reason that there is no wrong or treason in my hands. I have not sinned against you, though you hunt my life to take it. May the Lord judge between me and you, and may the Lord avenge me against you. But my hand shall not be against you. 16. As soon as David had finished speaking these words to Saul, Saul said, is that your voice, David, my son? And Saul lifted up his voice and wept. And he said to David, you're more righteous than I, for you have repaid me good, whereas I have repaid you for evil. And you have declared this day how you have dealt well with me, in that you did not kill me when the Lord put me into your hands. For if a man finds his enemy, would he let him go safe? So may the Lord reward you with good for what you have done this day. And now behold, I know that you surely will be king, and that the kingdom of Israel will be established in your hands. So it's also important that we don't try to make God's promises come true on our own effort. It didn't work for Abraham, did it? He made a mess of things. And if David would have said, you know, well, I was anointed king, so I'll just go ahead and get rid of this guy who's chasing me and I'll become king. But that wasn't God's plan, was it? That wasn't the way they wanted that transfer of power to happen. So sometimes when you or I are in difficult situations, situations we didn't want, situations we didn't expect. And we become overwhelmed by the size of the situation, by the fact that it doesn't seem like there's any way we can get through the situation. First thing we need to do is seek the Lord. Whatever that looks like for you, to spend time with Him, to hear from Him. And we need to recall how He was faithful in the past. Because sometimes when we're in the middle of a really difficult situation, that's all we can see. We completely forget that, hey, back here when I had this situation, He provided for me. When I had this situation, He helped me find the answer. When I was going through this, He walked with me through that. Okay, He's going to do the same thing. We need to learn to diligently. Remember, He said, you'll find me when you seek for me with all of your heart. And that's when we find Him then to be our peace, our strength, our courage, our shield, all that we need Him to be. So point two. There are times, though, when we're in a situation where it seems so overwhelming, it seems so dark. We're in the middle of the mountain, no cell service. We've run out of all of our options. What the Lord says then, in those situations, He'll seek us. What a promise that is. He said that He would seek us and find us right where we are. Are we ever lost from Him? He knows exactly where. He knows exactly what situation we're in. And He already knows the way through the situation. Okay? He wasn't like, oh, well, look what happened there. What am I going to do about that? I have felt that way already. Like, Lord, I don't know what you're going to do about this. And, you know, I was certainly surprised. Ezekiel 34. For this is what the Lord God says. I myself will search for and find my sheep. Are you a sheep? In His flock you are. I will be like a shepherd looking for his scattered flock. See, sometimes we even scatter. Like, yeah, I'm just going to isolate and stay at home and try to work this out myself. I will find my sheep and rescue them from all of the places where they scattered on that dark and cloudy day. And I will bring them home. Yay! That is verse 11, Ezekiel 34:11. He will go and find you even if it's dark. Even if you're hiding under a bush. Even if you climbed a mountain and went into a cave. I'll find you. Wherever you scattered on that dark and cloudy day, He will find you, gather you up, and His promises, He'll bring you back home where you need to be. Come on. Verse 15. I myself will tend my sheep. I will give them a place to lie down in peace. See, sometimes we can't find peace. This past year, I've had some situations, some rough situations, and we have some challenging situations now. But it said in those places, He would provide a way for us to lie down in peace. It didn't say I would find. Said He will provide a place for us to lie down in peace. I myself will tend my sheep and will give them a place to lie down in peace, says the Sovereign Lord. I will search for my lost ones who strayed away. Sometimes we just get off the path and we slowly stray away. I will bring them safely home again, and I will bandage the injured strengthen the weak. Come on! How many of you have ever felt injured or weak or lost or in need of peace? He said then in those situations he would come after us. Because we may not have the strength, the emotional, mental, physical ability to go after him. But he'll come get us and bring us home. Father God says he knows where we are and he will find us right there. And then you all know what Jesus said. Remember Jesus said, if you've seen me, you've seen the Father? Look at how similar this is. Remember Jesus said, I am the good shepherd? And he told us that the sheep hear and know his voice. He goes before us and leads us. And what does that mean our position is? That we follow him. Okay? The good shepherd says, over here is a place to lie down and rest. And if I say, nope, I'm just going to stay right where I am, then we can't take advantage of that. Or if he says, right here is where you need to eat and drink, yeah, I'm enjoying what I've chosen to eat and drink. How's that going to work out for you? Because we don't always make the best choices, do we? We think we know what we need. We think we know what we want. Not always true. All right. We looked at two Old Testament stories. Now we're going to look at two New Testament stories. Luke 15. So Jesus, as you know, told stories, told parables. So it would help us understand his point. It would help us to understand why he did or said something. So in this case, the Pharisees and the scribes were grumbling because they're like, if this is a holy man, why does he spend time with sinners? Well, that's because they wouldn't admit they were one. But he spent time with known sinners. Yeah, okay. So he said, well, then I'm going to tell you this story. Which man among you, if he has 100 sheep, and has lost one of them, does not leave the 99 in the open pasture and go after the one which is lost until he finds it? When he has found it, he lays it on his shoulders, rejoicing. And when he comes home, he calls together his friends and his neighbors, saying to them, rejoice with me, for I found my sheep, which was lost. Now, maybe some of you do that every day with keys and cell phone. I won't mention who I know that does that every day with keys and cell phones. But maybe it's something even more valuable that you misplaced. I mean, this is my third wedding band. And this particular one, I was floating down the stream at camp with the kids. My hands were in the ice-cold water, and I lifted my hand up, and, oh, no, not another one. And somebody from church went out with a metal detector and found my ring. So then, 2 years ago, Stacy and I go on vacation, and we were sitting on the beach, and I thought, okay, I'm going to be really smart this year. I'm going to take my ring off before I get in the ocean, because that's when it's cold and the water's and it slips off. So I laid it on my chair, beach chair. We went swimming. We had a great time. We come out, we fold up the beach chairs, and we go back. And as soon as we got back, I'm like, you have got to be kidding me. So we went back, up and down the beach. We knew exactly where our chairs were, but it could have fallen anywhere on the travel. So then we ate supper, went back to our hotel room. I'm like, I'm going back to the beach again. I cannot lose this ring again. And Stacy's upset, because women see it as, you really don't value the ring or you wouldn't keep losing it. Well, I'm sorry, I didn't try any of the times. So I go out on the beach again, and I look the whole way there and the whole way back. Nothing.
Oh, my goodness.
So the next morning, I said, "Before I can't even eat breakfast because I'm really upset now." Okay, I'm going to go out one more time. Stacy said, "I'll come with you. I'll come with you." So we go out to the beach again. Nobody's there except us. And we're walking all around looking for it. I'm like, "Well, how do we find this room?" You know, it could have been out in the middle of the Caribbean by then. And so we're looking and looking. And I look down and I see these two guys. And they have a metal detector. Oh, it worked last time. So I go up to the guy with the metal detector. We were in a Spanish-speaking country. And I know a little bit. Okay. Yo hablo un poco español. And I asked him if he would come find something for me. No hablo inglés. So he calls his buddy over. He hablo inglés. Oh, thank you. And then I'm calling my wife over because she speaks Spanish. So between the four of us, We figured out that I'd lost my ring, but they wanted to go because they had, like, you know, grids. That's the word I was looking for. They had grids, and they had, like, five more grids to get to where. So we just stood there, and we waited. They come over, and he goes, "You sit here." I'm like, yep. He goes, "You know, it could." I said, "I know. It could have washed out in the ocean." So he starts down in the water, and he works his way up about halfway between the two. Which makes no sense because we picked the chair and went that way. But over time, I guess, it had washed down. You hear this beep, 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 beep. So he digs down. And there it is. Come on. And so I rejoiced. I didn't call any of my friends because none of my friends knew. But I was pretty happy. I posted it on Facebook. And this guy said that I made his day because I don't know if he thought we were on our honeymoon or what, but you know, he was like, "Oh, you two were here together as a couple and you lost your ring and now I found it for you." I was like, "Yeah." And so he was all excited, so I had to take a picture with him and he posted it on his Facebook page in Spanish. "So rejoice with me, for I found my sheep which was lost." And I was that excited about a ring. So how excited is Jesus when he finds one of us and brings us home? "I tell you, in the same way, there will be more joy in heaven over one sinner who repents than over 99 righteous people who do not need repentance. Or how about the woman? She has 10 silver coins and loses one." Now, more than likely, that was all the money she had in the world. This wasn't like just an extra 10. And so she lost the tenth of her money. "And does she not light a lamp and sweep the house and search the beach and get metal detectors until she finds it? And when she finds it, she calls together her friends and says, 'Rejoice with me, for I have found the coin which was lost.'" All right, so we want to end with our final story. But I want to put it in context. Jesus is still talking about finding what was lost. Either our first point was we seek him, second point was he seeks us. So sometimes we're the lost coin, the lost ring, the lost sheep, and he finds us. Other times, as we started, so we've made a whole circle now, sometimes we're the one that needs to seek him. So that's the context that he tells this story. And I'm not going to read the whole thing because you know most of it, so I'm just going to jump in the middle. Younger son says, "Give me my inheritance now. I don't want to wait till you die. I need it now because I want to enjoy living now." Okay. So he gives him his inheritance. He goes to a foreign country. You can read all the things that he spends it on. Not good choices. He runs through all his money and he's so hungry, he's eating pig slop. That's pretty hungry. I think I'd go through a trash can outside a restaurant before I'd eat pig slop. But, so he's eating slop that was thrown out to pigs, and he realizes, you know what? Even the lowliest servant in my Father's house has food to eat every day and has shelter and provision. And I've chosen to leave my Father and go and waste this inheritance. When he came to his senses, he said, "How many of my Father's hired men have more than enough bread? And here I am dying from hunger. I will get up and go to my Father, and I will say to him, 'Father, I have sinned against heaven and in your sight. I am no longer worthy to be called your son.'" Sometimes we feel that way, don't we? I've gotten so far away, I've made enough bad choices that I think you just cut me off the family. You wrote me out, you erased me, I'm no longer welcomed. I am no longer worthy to be called your son. Make me as one of your hired men. So he got up and he headed toward his father. This is one of these stories. It doesn't matter how many times I read this. But while he was still a long way off. Come on. So all we have to do is turn. And the father knows that we're heading back. No matter how far we find ourselves from God, no matter how many bad choices we make, no matter how lost we feel like we are. Because remember, he gets reminded in a verse or two, even when you were there, you were still a son. But he wasn't living like a son, was he? Sounds like our Wednesday night identity classes. Yeah. So as soon as he turned and headed home, his father saw him and felt compassion for him. See, in your mind, you're thinking, I'm going to face judgment. I'm going to face harsh words. This is not going to turn out well for me. That's not what we see, is it? Felt compassion for him and ran and embraced him and kissed him. Come on. Ran to him, embraced him, and kissed him. And the son said to him, even after that, see, sometimes we don't realize our identity, do we? "Father, I've sinned against heaven, and in your sight, I am no longer worthy to be called your son." See, it's perfectly fine to say, "I've sinned. I've made some really bad choices. I did things I shouldn't have done. I went where I shouldn't have. I spent all your money on things I shouldn't have spent it on. You gave me gifts and I squandered them." But this part is not the truth. "I am no longer worthy to be called your son." But the father. Yay. But the father said to his slaves, "Quickly, bring out the best robe." What? What do you think he smelled like? What do you think he looked like? "And put it on him and put a ring on his hand and sandals on his feet and bring that calf that we've been fattening up and kill it and let us eat and celebrate. For this son of mine was dead and has come to life again. He was lost and has been found." And they began to celebrate. So 2 points this morning. When we feel lost, separated from God, confused, worried, filled with fear, don't know what way to go, the enemy looks bigger than we could even imagine. The situation looks impossible. We don't know how we're going to get through this situation. We ask and keep asking. Seek and keep seeking. Knock and keep knocking. And we seek diligently after him, knowing that he's also seeking us. He's also heading toward us. He's also waiting to embrace us and to give us the ability to get through that situation, to lie down in peace. All right, so what we're going to do is, however you can best seek after him this morning. If that looks like just sitting in your seat, that's absolutely fine. If that means kneeling in the aisle, if that means coming up front and standing, if that means coming up front, laying on the floor and saying, God, I'm diligently seeking you this morning, whatever that looks like for you. And you are free to just spend some time seeking the Lord, whatever that looks like for you.